everyone. The Ways and Means meeting will come to order. First, clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. Members with the minutes of April 22nd before us. Would someone like to move the minutes? Representative Detmer moves the minutes. Any corrections, additions, changes to the minutes? See none. All in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Members, we have three items of business, a proposed change to the budget resolution, House File 303, which is the legacy bill, and House File 1638, the Health and Human Services bill. I know that there's, looks like a little bit of a standing room only situation here, so because I think the House File 303 legacy bill will go more quickly, I'm going to take that one first after we deal with the budget resolution. Members, with the budget resolution you have in front of you, we're proposing a change to the budget resolution. And so, members, let's go to the budget resolution first. I will move the A25 amendment, and then, members, I'm going to move the A26 amendment to the A25 amendment. And what the effect of this is adding roughly an additional $52 million to the target for the Health and Human Services Committee, which will accommodate an amendment that they're going to have dealing with child protection services. And so, members, I guess maybe to start out with, just so that we can get the budget resolution completely before us, I'm wondering if I could have a vote on the A26 amendment to move it into the A25 amendment. All in favor of the A26 amendment to the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment to the amendment, A26, is adopted. Okay, members, discussion to the A25 amendment to the budget resolution as amended, which now would be $52 million more to Health and Human Services. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to track your numbers. When you and I talked earlier, you referenced $52 million. Now I see on the budget target handout, and then after you and I talked, the number $30 million surfaced. And if perhaps you could explain what is happening here, the difference between the 30 and the 52, because it appears that the budget resolution in and of itself is $30 million, and yet we're talking 52. So what's happening there? Maybe Mr. Marks can comment if you need.
Sure. Well, I think that both the top line number as well as the House Health and Human Services target's been adjusted, and I'll let Mr. Marks comment in a moment. But I guess, you know, to be perfectly frank, we've been debating about putting more money into Health and Human Services to deal with the report that we got on child protection services. We were debating between the $30 million number and $52 million number, and in trying to meet the deadlines that we have set and give the public proper notification, we had to put something out there, so we put out the $30 million number as something that we knew we would surely do. But after further discussion, we decided we wanted to go to the full $52 million, which is what the report recommended and which is what the governor and the Senate have. And again, of course, this is just changing the target, but that is the reasoning behind it, and so that's why those numbers are what they are.
Yeah, so Mr. Chairman, apparently the spreadsheet that I've got that was dated 4/23 is not accurate then.
Let me recognize. Oh.
It should read 52 million then. It looks like I'm just getting
a new spreadsheet. Representative Carlson.
That was what I was trying to reconcile. I'm not complaining about you're putting more money in. I've been advocating that in almost every bill that's come before us. That wasn't the point. I just wanted to make sure we understood before we adopted the change whether we were putting $30 million in or $52 million in, but that fits our conversation, and as you did reference on the House floor, 52.
Yeah, okay, absolutely. I'm sorry you didn't have an up-to-date spreadsheet.
Yeah, thank you.
And I guess we're making copies of that new spreadsheet. I wasn't aware that that new spreadsheet reflecting the 52 had not been distributed. Do other members or anyone else have questions on the proposed amendment to the budget resolution? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't have that yet either. I guess you're getting that to us. But so is that coming out of the money that was still left on the bottom line? Is that what we're doing here? And then how much is left on the bottom line after that?
Yes, Representative Liebling, that would be coming out of the bottom line. And there is about, Mr. Marks has handed me a sheet that says that after this, there'd be $96,644,000 of unallocated money, not counting the portion of the $5 million that we had set aside for other bills that hasn't yet been spent.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, being that we're looking at the spreadsheet, then that the other bills, that's an accurate number with all of our other actions at the $19,953,000.
Representative Carlson, I think maybe I'll recognize Mr. Marks on that. I think he's got the updated number.
Mr. Chair and members, the $19,953,000 counts $14,953,000 that was already been enacted in that deficiency bill a month or two ago, and then $5 million for other bills besides that. Of the other bills, the footnote on the bottom notes that the bill, House File 374, that was passed out of this committee in February, the lottery, electronic lottery games bill, that would use $893,000 of that $5 million that's above the $14,953,000. So there's a little over $4 million that isn't there yet. As I mentioned yesterday, we're, the claims subcommittee has passed a bill that we haven't considered in Ways and Means Committee yet that would, that's $17,000. Beyond that, I don't know where it might go.
Yeah, so
Representative Carlson.
Chair, and I'm just trying to, I saw the footnote, I'm just trying to reconcile that $14,953 with what we show dated 4/23 under other bills that says $19,953. I'm just curious why we don't change that number up there.
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, the math is simply $19,953 minus $14,953 leaves $5 million for other bills besides the deficiency one. And then I've noted that there is one bill that we are accounting for because it has already passed Ways and Means. That's the $893,000 for that electronic lottery games prohibition bill. But the rest of it is basically, it's allowed to be spent without amending the budget resolution because it's counted in the total spending. It's not in any individual target. So up to a little over $4 million more could be spent without amending the budget resolution in other bills.
Yeah, yeah, Representative Carlson, I know
that I understand. It's just that, we can visit offline. I would have thought that the other bills would reflect the actual number after our actions, or potential action, I guess, is what is part of it.
I think,
but
what
we're,
I would,
but
think
we're still showing without the footnote $19,953.
Yeah, I think the way
and
I think
it's
about
actually,
it,
as Mr. Marks pointed out, roughly $5 million.
Yeah, I think the way I think about it, Representative Carlson, is just as we set the targets for all these other bills, you know, I don't know, a month or so ago, and until just recently they hadn't come through Ways and Means, and so we hadn't actually spent that money. We set the target of $5 million for these other bills some time ago, and we simply haven't spent all that money yet. So that $5 million is set aside just as other money was set aside for the transportation bill and the other bills, but that doesn't necessarily mean that all of it has actually been spent yet. And as Mr. Marks said, there's something like $4 million of the $5 million that we haven't actually spent. I do expect there will be some other smaller bills coming through here that will spend some of it. How much, I guess I don't know.
I'm not sure, Mr. Chairman, if you understand what I'm saying. That
perhaps you don't.
We're showing 19953, and mm-hmm. our conversation says that there's really roughly 4 million that would be available, or 5, whatever, however you want to calculate that. At first glance, when looking at the spreadsheet, might assume there's 19.9 million, and we know that that's a very different number. But I'll stop there. And I know that whatever the accounting procedures are, Mr. Marks does it appropriately, so I'll accept it at this point. Thank you.
Okay. Other questions on the spreadsheet that was handed out, or on the A25 amendment as amended? Seeing none, all in favor of the A25 amendment to the budget resolution as amended, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment as amended to the budget resolution is adopted. All right, members, we're going to move to House File 303, the legacy bill. If Representative Erdahl, chair of the legacy committee, could come forward and take his place up front. And Chair Erdahl moves that House File 303 be referred to the General Register. Chair Erdahl, why don't you give us a little bit of a walk through your bill, and then I know you've got a couple of amendments, and we can deal with those.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And first of all, I think you're mistaken. I think most of these people are here for the legacy amendment.
Well, then there'll be plenty of room once you're done.
But also... could I just do the amendments first? I do have one person who, if there is a question, does need to leave soon. So.
Oh, surely. Which one would you like to take first?
I would like to take the film board, A26.
Okay. Representative Erdahl moves the A26 amendment.
Actually,
the A26 amendment.
I would like to do a brief oral amendment first.
All right.
Strike line 1.6, the state auditor designee.
Anything else?
No.
Okay. We'll incorporate the removal or deletion of page 1, line 6, into the A26 amendment. Line 6 is deleted. Chair Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this amendment is in regard to the recent report released by the legislative auditor, and deals with the Minnesota Film Board, and is one of the outcomes of the report by the legislative auditor was that there has been no real clear direction to the film board as to what the legislature expects. And so the purpose of this is simply to bring some folks together to attempt to give some direction to expectations from the legislature to the film board.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kahn.
Just a slight, I hate to have to always be the arithmetic corrector in this place, but just a slight correction. If you remove a member, you better on line 1.5 say 8 instead of 9.
Ah. All right.
That's true.
Okay. Well, we will incorporate that into the A26 amendment as well. Page 1, line 5, delete the word 9, insert the word 8. Thank you, Representative Kahn.
But that's the amendment.
Okay, discussion to the A26 amendment. Representative Kahn.
I don't think I object to what this amendment is doing, but I just really don't understand why it belongs in the legacy bill. There was no funding of film board in the legacy bill, in the last legacy bill. I don't think there are any proposals for the film board in this legacy bill. This section, if you look at our financial part and you look at, you know, it's all a floating target because we don't know what the tax bill is. But the tax bill, as it, I assume this comes out of the Arts and Cultural Fund, and that is already over budgeted. There is no money given along with this amendment, and it doesn't look inexpensive to do it. They've got to do a report really fast. They've got an awful lot of, they've got an awful lot of members. I know they serve without compensation, but I'm not sure that they're not required to have travel expenses and things like that paid. I don't think it belongs in this bill. I think it belongs in the bill where the arts board is, where the film board is funded. And I think it should be put there.
Okay, Chair Erdahl.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Kahn. The film board funding, when I chaired before, we did have some in the legacy bill. We do have other policy provisions in the legacy bill, and essentially this is a policy provision. I do not anticipate any cost to this. They will be those on this task force will do so. Those who serve will do so with the knowledge that they will not be compensated for it.
But Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know. I generally take the theory if we require someone to do a study that they should do that on their own. You know, that they should do that as part of their work schedule. But I can't believe that the work of a task force is something that is done without any expense. And I'm not sure about the payment of travel expenses. Is that something that, I don't know if that's something that we have to do or if that's something that's optional for people who are doing. I understand there's a difference between compensation and travel expenses, but again, we had nothing, there's nothing in this legacy bill, there was nothing in the last legacy bill about the film board. I just don't understand why this should be cut into the limited arts funds that we have in legacy. So I'm intending to oppose this at this time. Just I guess we don't rule things out of order, but I just don't see how it belongs in the bill.
Representative Davids, did I see you raise your hand?
No.
Okay. Chair Erdahl, any other response?
Well, as much as I respect Representative Kahn's opinion, I disagree and would respectfully request your support on this.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kahn and then Carlson.
Okay. Do you have any data on what the costs of oversight committees that meet? And I don't, where do they meet? Where do they do it? Who even calls a meeting? I mean, I just, Representative Erdahl, I have, is this your amendment? Did this amendment come from you?
Yes, it did.
Okay, I actually have, I assumed it didn't because I have much too much respect for you. But
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I have a slightly different concern, and my question is more a process one. We're setting up a board, and it appears there's no direct appropriation in the bill dealing with the film board. That's one issue, but probably more important is the jurisdiction of the Government Operations
yes.
Committee, because we're setting up a board. And I guess my first question, has this language or this amendment been before the Government Operations Committee?
Chair Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Carlson, yes, it has.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, now another follow-up question, because sometimes it gets a little bit sensitive if we do things that Government Op didn't, or any committee for that matter, necessarily agree with. So the question is then, did they have, an informational hearing? Did they positively act on this language? Why is it here as an amendment if it was given a separate hearing in the Governmental Operations Committee?
Chair Erdahl.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, it was a formal hearing. It was not an informational hearing.
Well, Chair Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, was there I guess my point in then I assume there was a bill before the committee.
Chair Erdahl.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, yes.
And I guess my question then is, where is that bill? What happened with that bill? Because we're dealing here with an amendment that came in just this afternoon.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson. It was not a bill that had been drafted and jacketed. It was an amendment that was offered.
Representative Carlson. Was there action then on that language somehow?
Mr. Chairman.
you know, I don't need this particularly.
Good.
I mean, this is supposed to be a nice, quick, clean, simple thing. I mean, all I want to do is to provide some direction to the film board as asked by the legislative auditor. If that's a problem, you know, I don't need to do it. I don't want to take up the time, you know, an hour debating this, Pete's sake.
Well, Mr.
Representative Carlson,
if I may, I said my question was a process question. I'm in the process of formulating an opinion on the board in and of itself, but sometimes Ways and Means is criticized when we act separately from the other committees, and I just wanted to make sure that we're not doing that so that there's an undue amount of time taken up on the House floor. Besides, if I read my calendar correctly, I think the chair set aside 8 hours for this hearing. If it
Well, matter of fact, we could go to midnight if we wish.
And Mr. Chairman, I don't think our side of the aisle is going to drive 8 hours worth of questions, so that you must be anticipating a lot from the other side of the table here.
Chair Erdl, as I'm looking at the amendment, I'm informed that if you look at line 26, there's also a reference to the state auditor. I wonder if, Representative Erdl, maybe you'd like to withdraw this amendment, and maybe council can scrutinize it and see if there's any other technical corrections that need to be made, and we can go on to another amendment that you have and then bring this one back up if you so choose.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's fine with me. I mean, the legacy bill does not rise and fall on this amendment.
Okay, well, we'll have council look at 826 and see if he sees some other changes that need to be made, and if you wish to offer it again, Representative Erdl, you can. Representative Conner.
While it's being looked at, you know, I hate to think I've memorized the rules, but wouldn't putting this on the bill require it to go to the Government Operations Committee?
Representative Kahn, my understanding is that because it was at the Government Operations Committee, this language, I thought I had heard that it had already passed through there.
Well, it didn't sound like anything had passed.
Yeah, it did.
Chair Erdl, did this go to the Government Operations Committee?
Mr. Chairman, yes, didn't it pass?
But I don't know what passing, Mr. Chairman, I don't know what passing something that's, I've never heard of passing something unless it's a bill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I've withdrawn it, so let's just move on.
All right. Okay. A26 amendment is withdrawn. Representative Erdl offers the A25 amendment. Representative Erdl.
I hesitate to offer this. This just, you know, the Mr. Chairman, the Humanities Center has historically been appropriated money from the legacy as a pass-through and deals with grants to other entities, and this simply tightens things up a little bit, gives a little more direction to what is expected of those receiving grants in terms of their reporting and how they can use the money.
All right. Representative Kahn.
This is a fine amendment, just what I would expect from the chairman.
Any other discussion of the 828 amendment?
25.
I'm not going to say anything.
25.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think I dare
ask. Excuse me, A25, I'm sorry.
I don't dare ask. I'm not trying to kill the amendments. I was just asking the question.
All right. See no further discussion. All in favor of the A25 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The A25 amendment is adopted.
Thank you, and I take no offense on the first one, guys.
Got your thing about
okay. The last amendment of which I'm aware is the A28 amendment, and council tells me that he's got a slight technical correction. Mr. Sullivan, could you give us that?
Mr. Chair and members, that's right. On page 2 of the amendment, actually back on page 1, the amendment requires the staff of the Lasard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council to prepare the land acquisition report. And currently on page 2, line 20, the language requires the Commissioner of DNR to submit that report. So my colleague recommends a change on line 2.20, delete Commissioner, and insert Lasard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council. And then page 2, delete line 21. So the amended language on page 2 would read, the Lasard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council must submit the report to the Legislative Coordinating Commission and the chairs and ranking minority members.
All right. I'll incorporate that language into the A28 amendment. And members, I guess my purpose in offering this just is to get some information and projections in terms of, as you look at the Lassard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council and the land they're purchasing and the fact that the Legacy Act will, of course, under the Constitution, be with us for some time, to get some sort of a sense of going forward how much land they might be buying based on the experience we've had with them now for roughly the past 5 years. It's merely an informational report that we're asking for. I talked to Chair Erdahl about it, and he told me he felt that the council had the time and available resources to be able to do this. And so, members, I guess I'd appreciate your support of this amendment so that we can get a sense of projections going forward of the sort of acreage that the Heritage Council is likely to buy based on the past, and also just a summary of land acquisition that's happened in the past. Discussion to the amendment. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to say I support the amendment, and the reality, I think we have to be careful when we ask folks to do a new additional work, but actually, Mr. Chair, when I read this amendment, and you did, I did get a chance to look at it yesterday when it was being prepared. Lassard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council staff actually does, I think, almost all of this work, if not all of this, and this would put it in a nice, concise form that would be good for the legislature to be aware of, so I support the amendment.
Seeing no further discussion. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'd be interested in knowing what Chair Drazkowski thinks about this provision. In his division report, he's doing some changes in tax policy there that I support. And the second part of this, there's quite a bit of tax items going on here. And I'd just be curious to hear about how these provisions work together. And from Chair Drazkowski and Chair David's viewpoints, noting that in the subdivision 7 of the amendment references the taxes paid going backward, which I get that, but in the omnibus tax bill, the statewide property tax is being eliminated. So I'm not sure if you're giving up on this on that provision in the tax bill already, or if you are saying that. It's just not clear how these work together.
All right. Well, I'll ask Representative Drazkowski to yield if he wants to. It's really just an informational report, but Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as a matter of fact, Mr. Chair, you arrived at this independent of talking to me, and I'm very supportive of it. I think it provides us additional information. It doesn't have any level of articulation with what we have in the tax bill, but simply shares the characteristic that it's about land purchases with those same funds, at least most of it. Some is with other funds as well in this report. But I think more information is better for us going forward, and so I'm very supportive of the amendment, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Lincheski, I guess I'd note on page 2, line 8, it says, including statewide business property taxes, if any. So I guess we'll have to see what happens with the tax bill and how it works its way out, but I think we've got all contingencies covered.
Yeah. Mr. Chair.
All right.
Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, Representative Kahn.
Okay. Well, we've heard from a couple of legislators. It might be heard nice to hear from the staff of the Lassard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council if they can do it without cost.
All right. The chair has told us he thought they could do it, and Representative McNamara has too, but I'm happy to have someone come forward if they wish. Is there someone from the Lassard Sam's Council here?
I wouldn't mind having it on the record of the committee.
All right. Sir, welcome to the Ways and Means Committee. Can you state your name for the record and give us your testimony?
Mark Johnson, Executive Director for the Lassard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council.
Welcome, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I did get a chance. Actually, I got this about an hour ago, so I had a chance to look it over quickly. At first blush, there's quite a bit of this information that we do already have. The tax information we don't have, and that would be a bit of a job to ferret that out. I think it could be done. I just have to find out exactly where. There's amount of this information from the PILT portion, especially we'll have to obtain from DNR. We can make it happen. We have a small staff, but we'll have to work it in. We've got, I guess, until January, I believe it is, of 16 to get it out. January 15th. So we'll, if you pass this, we'll do our best to get it out for you.
Thank you, sir. Any other questions? See none. All in favor of the A28 amendment with the incorporated language on page 2, lines 20 and 21, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Erdahl, two-year bill. I guess why don't you give us a walk through the bill now that we've done the amendments, because we never really quite had that yet. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure that the original amendment on the film board, you commented that there was a group that was going to work on it, and then he withdrew it, and I'm just wondering what the status is.
I had the impression that it was permanently withdrawn.
I buried it back here.
It's been permanently withdrawn.
I know it was at least temporarily withdrawn. I wasn't sure if it was permanently withdrawn in light of your comments. But okay,
yeah. Yep.
You.
No, I guess at this point I'm treating it as withdrawn.
Okay.
Okay. Chair Erdahl.
Thank you. Legacy bill this year, for this biennium, about $644 million, divided into the four dedicated funds, three of which are funded biennially, and then the outdoor heritage portion annually. The outdoor heritage this year will receive $99,993,000. The clean water fund for the biennium, $226,202,000. Parks and Trails, $89,351,000. And the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, $124,215,000. And if we're going to, you want to walk through the whole, you want to go through the whole bill on each of these?
You know, I don't know if we have to go, I certainly wouldn't recommend going through every item, but I guess an overview of the bill, Representative Erdahl, okay. In terms of the key items.
I'll continue with a relatively brief overview then. In the Outdoor Heritage Fund, the majority of the activity, 60,220 out of 77,551 acres, is in enhancement and restoration, incurring no PILT liability. The majority of funding, $67,894,500, is in acquisition. Approximately 54% of this is fee acquisition and 21% in easement acquisition. The PILT obligations from fee acquisitions are estimated to be $174,180. There are 50 FTEs, 60% of the total, which will be funded with the appropriations. Continued investment in ongoing projects account for 66% of the appropriations. Investment in public and private conservation partnerships involve 24 programs, which brings over $20 million of leverage into play. 1,865 acres of native prairie is anticipated to be acquired, and 2,143 acres of native prairie will be restored and enhanced. 162 miles of shoreline will be restored, enhanced, and/or protected. Language added stating the DNR is encouraged to plant milkweed. Thank you, Representative Kahn, for that one. The Commissioner of MMB shall look at alternatives to payment in lieu of tax payments, including a trust fund approach that would apply to land acquired with money from the Outdoor Heritage Fund and other dedicated funds. And again, we have within that prairies receiving $40,948,000. Forests, $12,634,000. Wetlands, $22,578,000. Habitat, $22,368,000. And administrative costs, $858,000 in 2016 and $670,000 in 2017. And if you have the bills or sheets in front of you, you see in the spreadsheet the list then of the various places where the money is being appropriated. Under Clean Water, Representative Torkelson's House File 1781 appropriates, as I said, $226,202,000 over fiscal year 16 and 17 from the Clean Water Fund. The bill prioritizes actual water quality studies to achieve important water quality improvements, from drinking water quality to developing lake and stream cleanup and protection plans. The various studies are being funded through the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, the Public Facilities Authority, the Pollution Control Agency, the Department of Natural Resources, the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources, Minnesota Department of Health, and the Metropolitan Council. The Clean Water Bill reflects the recommendations of the Clean Water Council, except the Minnesota Agricultural Water Quality Certification Program in Section 3. This bill allocates extra money to Bowser due to some money that was left over in the Clean Water Fund from last year. The University of Minnesota and the Metropolitan Council are removed as voting members from the Clean Water Fund because their vote could be viewed as a conflict of interest since they receive funding. The Board of Soil and Water Resources is required to consider environmentally friendly guidelines for our riparian buffers. And you also then have on your spreadsheets the appropriations of each of the departments and authorities and agencies receive money, the amounts received. Parks and Trails, which had been more contentious when I chaired this committee 4 years ago when we tried to divide up the various percentages. It is now, as we agreed 4 years ago, 40-40-20, 40% for the metropolitan parks, 40% for the DNR, and 20% for the Greater Minnesota Parks Commission. And the money is allocated. $43,628,000 in fiscal year 2016, and in 2017, $45,722,000. The Department of Natural Resources receiving $26,391,000 the first year, $27,655,000 the second, of which a percent is then given to the Minnesota Greater Minnesota Parks Commission. Metropolitan Council, $17,237,000 the first year, $18,067,000 the second. A policy provision in this, House File 36, Representative Dill, $512,000 of the money appropriated during the 2011 first special session for parks and trails given to the St. Louis and Lake Counties Regional Railroad Authority for extension of the Mesabi Trail. The appropriations from fiscal year 2013 can be used until June 30th, 2017, so it gave them an extension. Under the Arts and History Culture Fund, we have provided funding of $28,300,000 to the State Arts Board in the first year and $29,040,000 the second, of which they receive 47%. By statute, the State Arts Board receives 47% of the 19.75% in this section. We did, they might argue, reduce them slightly because $2.2 million for the fine art restoration in the Capitol is included in this provision. Another $1 million is included in this section, but not under the Arts Board for the Capitol fine art restoration. Historical Society funding, the Department of Education, Department of Administration, which acts as a pass-through, again, on your spreadsheet, you can follow down where the money in this section is being allocated. A total to the Arts Board of $57,340,000. And, you know, that was a quick run-through. I do have Representative Torkelson and Representative McNamara here. If you have more detailed questions on Lessard Sams or the Clean Water Council, they would be glad to participate in the discussion with that. If you have more detailed questions regarding the Parks and Trails or the arts, history, culture portion, I would be glad to help out.
Okay, a couple questions here to the overview, and then I know I've got some testimony to take, and then we can get into more discussion of the bill. But I've got Representative Wagenius and Davids and Kahn and Carlson. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple things. One is an observation that in the first section of Lazard-Sams, it's listed as Subdivision 2 is prairies. And Lord knows I wish that were true, but there's a lot of distinction between prairies and grasslands, and a lot of what's going to be acquired here is grasslands. And I think to be honest with citizens, we should go back to the way we were doing this and dividing it up between prairies and grasslands so citizens would know actually what we are doing. So hopefully that is something that they can help you out with. Honesty to the public is always a good idea.
Well, I would hope, thank you, Representative Wagenius. I hope that Representative McNamara, do you have a comment on that or take note of her suggestion?
Took note there, Mr. Chair.
Representative McNamara.
Representative Wagenius, Representative Erdahl, I did make note.
All right, thank you.
Okay. I can have a couple of questions about the actual content of the water part.
Sure, Representative Wagenius.
Representative Wagenius, would you use the microphone a little closer? I can't hear back here.
I know my voice is quiet. There are two places that I see us falling behind. And one of them is in there's no money to the Geologic Atlas folks to look at the groundwater in the state. I mean, we had them on a plan so we could finish within a certain number of years. And now without an appropriation, there's some money going to DNR, but there's no money going to the Geologic Atlas folks. So I don't understand why we would want to slow down when we, in Representative McNamara's committee, we've already run into some problems where people don't know about their groundwater and want to appropriate extra money to check on their groundwater when we haven't done the basic science with the University of Minnesota, which just has an absolutely outstanding Geologic Atlas Department. So I'm just not understanding why we're slowing down.
Now, Chair Riddle.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius, and Director Johnson, I think, could more adequately answer that question for you than I.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, I don't know if I can, if I'll answer to your, I'll try to answer it as best I can. The with regards to the research component, one of the things that the council has always felt is because of the constitutional dedication of the fund and that it's just be spent to protect, preserve, protect, restore, enhance wetlands, forests, prairies, etc., that that does not leave room for them to spend dollars in the research side. Although they are looking at how can we pull it.
No, no, I'm talking about the water money, not Lazard-Sams money.
Pardon?
No, I was talking about the water legacy money. Clean water money, not water. Not your
clean water money.
Yes. It's the water money
Dorkelson.
That is spent has been spent on the Atlas, not you.
Is there a question for Chair Torkelson?
Well, I think it's a general question. It actually was a question to Representative Erdahl, although maybe Representative Torkelson knows the answer. We are slowing down in two places here. One is in the Geologic Atlas, which helps us understand our groundwater. And maybe counties and half the counties in the state have been covered. And we were on a systematic get the rest of the counties covered, and there was no money recommended for the Geologic Atlas. Some for DNR, but that's the B part, not for the A part, which is the first part that has to be done. So that was one. And then the money to the PCA that actually looks at understands our waters that are needing to be cleaned up, we're slowing down there too. And we have been very systematically on a 10-year plan, and now we're slowing down. So those are the two questions I have about why, when we have the money, are we slowing down on those two things?
Chair it all.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And pass it on to Representative Torkelson to answer if you believe we're slowing down.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Chair Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Chair, and Representative Genius. It's my understanding that the atlases are being funded as fast as they can be completed. There's an issue of capacity there. If you have different information than that, please please let me know, and we'll try to make sure that those are done. I agree those are important projects and need to proceed as fast as they can. We have a limited number of folks that do that work. It's my understanding there was enough money in the process to keep it moving at the speed that it can move at. As far as the PCA's funding goes, the Clean Water Council made a recommendation that was somewhat lower than their request, but they felt the recommendation is adequate to keep the 10-year cycle in place.
Representative Guineas.
Well, the thing about the Atlas is it takes 3 or 4 years to do one. So they have to have the money plan ahead to have the staff to do it. And if we don't allocate the money, they can't plan for their staff to get it done. And these take a long time. So I do think we are shortchanging them because we have been on a faster track with LPCMR money and water legacy money to get the job done. And so that, I think we need to revisit that. But if PCA says it takes a certain amount of money to get the wraps done, I don't know that the Clean Water Council can say, PCA is going to slow down, or Clean Water Council knows more about PCA's budget than PCA does. Well, I don't know what's going on here.
Chair, you know, we're getting a little bit away from just the questions on the overall overview of the bill, but Chair Torkelson, do you want to take that?
I really have nothing more to add, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Guineas. Okay.
Then the other piece of the puzzle I wanted to look at here is in here you have allocated some money to Bowser, yes, for targeted wellhead drinking water protection, and it's $3.5 million. And my question is, how much of the problem that we're having with our wellheads does this solve?
Chair Riddall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are you looking for a percentage?
Yes. Or some way that we can understand and tell folks, are we on a what? The reason I'm asking is I think this is a very low amount of money. We are having drinking water wells getting contaminated at an ever-increasing rapid rate. I know that Representative McNamara's home county of Dakota County, they're finding contaminated drinking water, and Dakota does a really good job, a good county. They're finding a lot of contaminated private wells. Hastings has a huge problem. So obviously we're not doing what we need to do to protect drinking water wells, and that's why I'm asking how much of the problem does this solve? And if you don't know that now, that would be helpful for the floor.
Chair Riddall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Torkelson, do you have any idea? I do know that, you know, in the past, before we had the Legacy Act, you know, these percentages for contaminated rivers, lakes, and streams and groundwater were available to us, and they were very slowly improving. And I do know that there has been a sizable increase since in cleaning up impairments since the Legacy Act, but I don't know what the percentages are now.
Representative Wiggins, can I come back to you in a little bit, or did you have one more question to this point?
It's okay. Just a follow-up to that. While some lakes, rivers, and streams may be cleaning up, I'm talking about drinking water, and that's getting worse. So then the question is for the floor then, how much of the problem does this amount of money solve? We don't have to answer it now.
Perhaps that's something that Representative Torkelson can see if there is an answer to.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Members, I've got several people on the list here. Why don't I do that, and then we'll... I've got Representatives Davids, Kahn, and Carlson, and then I'm going to take testimony, and then we'll go back to other questions or comments on the bill. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be very brief. In fact, maybe I'll take this offline with the author, but you mentioned that we're using taxpayers' money to plant weeds. Milkweed, I believe it was, back where I come from, we spray it, we mow it, we burn it, we plow it under, so maybe we can talk about that offline. I'll pass, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman?
Here at all?
I'd like to ask if I could see Representative David's Monarch Butterfly Collection.
We spray them, too.
Mr. Chairman.
Don't anyone plan on any tax amendments regarding deductions for monarch butterfly habitat. Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, first of all, I hope everyone will refrain from sending a press release to one of my favorite legislators' district about what he just said, because it's probably enough to unelect him in some sectors. But I would certainly, by the time the next generation who's collecting monarch butterflies gets into office. Well, anyway, I'm following up on the geological atlases. Is there anyone here from Mingeo who can testify as to what the effect of not including the funding is?
Is there someone from Mingeo here? I don't see anyone. Okay. Chair Torkelson, do you have something to that?
Well, I have a text here from staff that says University of Minnesota said they didn't need the money.
Well, that's...
Representative Kahn.
All right, that's not exactly what I would ask.
Okay.
That's not exactly what I would say to have someone from Mingeo talking about what their plans are. It's okay.
All right. Well, it doesn't appear we have anyone from Mingeo
okay.
here.
Okay.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I spent a fair amount of time in meetings, as did Representative Erdahl, dealing with the capital. And in Article 4 here, and you referenced apparently there's two places in the bill where there's money for the restoration and preservation of art in the capital. And those discussions, that's quite important that be done. But we also, at least one and maybe two, in fact, it was two of those meetings, I think, we talked about the need for new art because of the lower level being redone. Some people might refer to it as a basement, but it's really, when this is all done, not going to be a basement like we might traditionally think, and there was a lot of discussion about new art for that level, and I'm just wondering if there's anything in the bill for that, or if there were ever any requests and so on, because I understand there's a committee now that's going to be looking into that very issue of the art for the lower level.
Chair Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Carlson. I serve on the Arts Commission as well, and We certainly are looking at how to display art in the Capitol. There is no money in this bill for new art in the Capitol directly. It could find its way in through some other means, but there's no direct appropriation for new art. As you say, there is $3.2 million for the restoration of the fine art, but it remains to be seen through the work of the Arts Commission how this is going to be displayed, how it's going to be set up. But yes, there will be a place for new art in the Capitol when it's restored.
Representative Carlson.
And Mr. Chairman, I would only footnote that being that that's the case for that building, all we have to do is look around this room, and it might be kind of nice to have some art here as well. We did it one time in several of these rooms, and it's no longer here. I don't know what happened to it, but at any rate, for the Capitol, while it's under the restoration, I think it's important at some point to begin to look what we are going to do on. I keep wanting to call it the lower level, the lowest level. I'm trying to avoid the word basement. But at any rate, I just had that interest. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thank you. Members, we had a couple of people talk to us about testifying here. I've got Leslie Davis talked about testifying, but we are on a little bit of a time schedule here. I know there's a lot of people standing. Mr. Davis provided testimony that we have passed out in everyone's packets, and since he did, I understand, testify before the Legacy Committee, I'm going to, in the interest of time, just alert you to the information he handed out that you can read. And then I'm going to call Commissioner Tom Workman forward, who also wants to provide some testimony. And Commissioner Workman, I will say welcome back to the Committee on Ways and Means. You must have been here at some point in your legislative career.
Never, Mr. Chairman, never had the honor, but I am looking for retired legislator oil paintings for the bottom level of the Capitol. Mr. Chairman, and I am not speaking to you as County Commissioner Workman. I'm speaking to you as a lobbyist for the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board, and I will be very brief. We do appreciate the work of the Legacy Committee. The chairman has been most gracious. The members have worked hard. We're here to say we support House File 303 as it is, and we appreciate the lack of acrimony in particularly the Parks and Trails section of the bill. So that's all I have.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Workman. Seeing no questions for the witness, we'll move back into other discussion of the bill. Any other questions for Chair Erdahl or other discussion of the bill? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And it was brought to my attention that there are a few provisions in here as it pertains to agriculture. And I just want to get it on record that we did have information on this in the Agriculture Committee. So it has been addressed in the Ag Committee, so there's no need to send it that direction. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Kahn?
Well, if we're finishing up now as the lead DFL member on the committee, I'd like to say it's a pretty good bill. We offered some amendments that Representative Erdahl didn't except which would have made it an excellent bill, but we'll continue with discussion on the way. And I suggest that all committee members support the bill.
All right. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just a quick comment to Representative Hamilton. The only reason that at least I was raising questions about process was that was a an amendment that had just come in this afternoon and was just trying to clarify that. So your point is well taken about the agriculture. Thank you.
All right, seeing no further discussion, Representative Erdahl renews his motion that House File 303, as amended, be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 303, as amended, is referred to the General Register. Members, next is House File 1638.
Good afternoon.
Welcome, Chair Dean. Representative Dean moves that House File 1638 be referred to the General Register. And Representative Dean, I guess I don't know if I know you've got a long author's amendment. Do you want to take that in the amendment to the amendment now, or do you want to walk through the bill first?
Mr. Chair, since the bill is very lengthy, I think I would like to do the amendment and actually amend the amendment walk through that and then just give a very, very brief overview of the bill and then go to any questions that members have.
Great. All right. Representative Dean moves the H-1638A 42-2 amendment, and then he moves the H-1638A 45 amendment that I'm informed, Representative Dean, that on page 1, line 6, there's a technical correction in the second number. It should be $5,953,258,000 instead of $259,000. So I assume you're okay incorporating that?
Mr. Chair, I'm told that was just a transposition and a technical error.
All right. Okay. So we have the A45 amendment with that technical correction on page 1, line 6. The A45 amendment to the amendment. Discussion to the A45. Representative Dean, why don't you tell us what the A45 amendment to the amendment does?
Mr. Chair and members, that's the provision we talked a little bit about earlier, which essentially funds the full recommendations of the child protection.
All right. So this would move the amount of money in the bill for child protection to about $52 million. Is that right, Chair Dean?
That is correct.
Okay. All right. Discussion to the A45 amendment to the amendment. See no discussion. All in favor of the A45 amendment to the amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The A45 amendment to the amendment is adopted. Representative Dean to the A42-2 amendment as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And this amendment brings the bill into balance, and it incorporates several provisions, both Democrat and Republican, that were incorporated at the end of the process, some of which, including a provision of mine, which was taken out for the purposes of, there's a website that was taken out, which is a consumer-friendly website that looked at transparency that would have brought the bill to the Commerce Committee. From what I understand, so in the interest of time and of working on that more, we took that out. We also have several provisions that are included within this regarding the child protection, which is the biggest piece of this that changes that we have within that. Both for some language incorporating pieces of Representative Kreisch's bill, as also some recommendations from the report. And that's important, members, because the recommendations from that report came out at or after the time that we got our target. And as we've been absorbing that and learning more about that, it seemed like a good thing that we should incorporate and are doing so in this process. And I think that Representative Kreisch's work, as well as many others in the legislature, is right to incorporate within this. We are also looking at taking several of the provisions within member considerations, border consideration with Representative Backer on page 16. We have several pieces of the child protection that come within three portions of the bill, of the amendment as you walk through that. We can answer questions about that with myself or staff within that piece. Let's see. There's Representative Zerwas' provision on home and community-based services that was added, a QAM piece on housing as well. Representative Lane's House File 451 on child support. Representative Mullery's House File 827. And some other technical additions relating to the riders. within that, and I'll see if I missed anything of major note within that. I don't believe so. I believe so. The majority of that, of the meat of the amendment, does deal with the different sections of the child protection piece. So that's probably what you see before you, and that's the biggest moving piece. Also, our bill base spending is $12,771,000,000.
Before I get into that, Representative Dean, I do have a question from Representative Mahoney on the A42-2 amendment. So maybe we should just deal with that, and then we can get into the bill. Representative Mahoney.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will try to be brief because I don't want to be here 8 hours either. I missed a hockey game last night, which has got me into a mood. Representative and it's not my own, it's not, it's somewhat my own fault. Representative Dean, on page 18 of the A42 amendment, you have new language about on line 18.5 and 18.6. You have new language about a licensed plumber complying with all requirements of this chapter and all relevant sections of the plumbing code, which essentially says that a plumber can now work on a well system. And I'm not sure, you may or may not understand that you put yourself into the middle of a couple of, well, you do know something about how good tradespeople try to treat each other, so you got yourself right in the middle of it with this. And I know they were trying to work out a deal, and I haven't been able to hear back from them. I likely would have heard about the deal, so I just want to make you aware of that. But the way compromise typically works is that one side gets one thing and another side gets another. The way this amendment is written, the plumbers come out entirely on top, and the well drillers don't get anything here. So I just want you to be aware of that. And also, it's not your intent that this, that if the plumbers can do well drilling systems, you're not allowing the well drilling companies to do plumbing systems, because the plumbers have the public health issue, and that's why they're in the plumbing, in the health, public health division here versus the well drillers, which are over at the Department of Labor and Industry. So your intent is not to kind of blend the two, correct?
Chair Dean.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mahoney, that's correct. Representative Hamilton brought this to the committee, and we put it on, I believe, in the last session of our committee, and I actually was a little opposed the bill, not because I don't like the bill. I love the bill, but I was concerned that it might have to go to a different committee, so it failed on a questionable voice vote in the committee. And I was primarily concerned that it might get dragged into another committee, so that's the reason that it's before us here. And I'm sorry, I forgot to neglected to bring that up when I was introducing the bill. We had talked about it earlier, and it wasn't for any other reason that I just forgot about it. But I believe Representative Hamilton can respond to that.
Representative Hamilton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Mahoney. And actually, it was a very questionable decision on the voice vote, because there was only two people that voted against it, the chair being one of them.
Actually, Mr. Chair, you should never question the hearing of a chair.
Well, I am on this one, Representative Mahoney. I am on this one. And so if there's any issues around this at all, just in essence of time, we'll go ahead. If you oppose this, we'll go ahead and I'll agree to pull it out. And with this whole thing, I just be very clear on that. And, you know, you're talking about this. Right now it is law at 25 miles. And if you can't find a well driller within 25 miles, you can go ahead and use a plumber, right? And so now what they're looking at doing, I think this is in the spirit of compromise, that they're pushing that out to 50 miles, so you have to go out further to find a licensed driller. That's the give and take there. And then if you use a plumber, that plumber now will have to comply with all the requirements of this chapter and all relevant sections. So I believe there is some give and take there as it pertains to that. But again, if you have issues with this, we're not going to derail this, the entire bill, over this one. But I ask that if it's a voice vote, I'm going to ask for a roll call. I won't ask for a roll call.
So, Chair Dean, can I ask you, I guess, is this in here because the Department of Health is in the purview of the Health and Human Services Committee?
Yes.
All right. And this is part of the amendment, Representative Mahoney.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm happy, I'm comfortable letting it move forward. I have stepped out and I've made a number of phone calls and haven't heard back. If that's the attitude that, you know, if there's a problem with it, we can work on it between now and then. But I want to make sure it's on the record that the chair of the Health and Human Services Committee, and with it under his purview, that this does not work in reverse, that the well drillers can do work beyond which is in the scope of the law as it sits today, which is they can bring the wellhead from the wellhead to, I believe, the first fitting inside the house. And is that your intent? Is just so that a plumber could go out and fix the well, fix the pull out the submersible and then dump it back in and put the head on?
Mr. Chair.
I think I'm going to go to him because it's in his purview.
Chair Dean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, that is my understanding of the way it's written and how you would interpret it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, other discussion of the A42-2 amendment as amended. Representative Liebling, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I got dragged, unwillingly dragged into this issue as well, and so that being the case, I'm glad Representative Mahoney is on this because we were actually during our committee hearing, we were saying, what does Mahoney think about this? And we didn't have the benefit of knowing that at the time. But I am just curious to know either Chair Dean or Representative Hamilton, who brought this to you? Who is asking for this? How did this come to be such a big focus of the HHS finance bill?
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And it's my understanding, right? Again, it's my understanding that this was an issue way up in northern Minnesota. And that when they were searching for someone to actually assist to repair a well, they had to go hundreds of miles to find somebody to do that. And so the most of the cost came in windshield time. And it was a senator that brought it forward initially, and so then it was that's where it originated. And I was brought to my attention after it didn't get a hearing in the House. I'm going to be very, very clear. It didn't have a hearing. Very clear on that. And so then it was brought and said, since you serve on the committee, would you be willing to offer this up? And so then they informed me on it and got me up to speed, and that's when I said yes. As long as I have Representative Loeffler and Representative Liebling's support on this, then I'll go ahead and offer it up. And I forgot to get the chair's support as well. That's where I went wrong. And here we are. So,
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hamilton and committee, my memory serves me only because I was in the midst of a few things with this amendment. This is an amendment that came onto the conference committee last year, and I believe it was, yes, I know it was Senator Lurie who brought it on behalf of another senator that is farther north than Senator Lurie. I'm not sure why it's coming back 1 year later, but I will let it go. And yeah, I understand.
Like
that's a Tom Bach deal, but I won't like go any farther than that.
Yeah. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to be clear on the record, though, I did not express a position in favor of it or against it. I just kind of tried to figure out what the heck was going on with it, and I, as today, remained neutral on it. So duly. I don't want to get in the middle of this either.
Chairman, duly noted. I stand corrected. Thank you.
All right. See, no further discussion. All in favor of the A42-2 amendment as amended. Representative Liebling?
Well, Mr. Chair, the A42-2 has a lot more in it, and even though we've resolved, I think, the issue of the plumbers in this amendment, there's certainly a lot more in here that I think we need to discuss.
I wasn't aware. I guess I was wasn't aware. There was so much time spent on plumbers that I guess I had thought that the main portion of the amendment was not something that people thought needed further discussion. So I'm sorry. Go ahead, Representative Leland.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And there's actually quite a bit in here, and I know that Representative Dean discussed a little bit of it, but I get that, you know, having my quick look through this, and this came in kind of late, so it's been a little bit of a struggle to really figure out what all is in it. I know that the child protection pieces are a big part of it, but I would like to understand a little bit more about what is going on here. So, for example, on lines 1.5 to 1.24 of the amendment, there's some language here that increases some fees, payment rates in the bill, and I guess I'd like to understand why that's going in this amendment and whether there is a corresponding increase in the spreadsheet to pay for this.
Chair Dean, and I guess I should mention that I believe the spreadsheet you have before you is with the A42-2 amendment adopted. Is that correct, Chair Dean?
Correct.
Yes. All right. Chair Dean.
Yes. And just to that, talked to Mr. Marks this morning. Our base level spending is $12,771,184,000. Target of $11,762,352,000 for a target of 1.008832. We're proposing additional spending of $52,180,000, which was the adjustment, giving our final target at minus 956,652, and we are balanced at that within this incorporated amendment. So I just want to, for the purposes of the Ways and Means, that is our new target, and we are balanced with this amendment. Also, yeah, that's that is a Representative Franson bill. It's House File 1013, and that deals with in-home services. That is an increase for in-home services, and what that's just trying to do is to provide better reimbursement for people who provide services in-home. And skilled nursing, physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, and home health visits. So that's not necessarily, those are some other patient service providers that are getting an additional piece within this simply because when we were readjusting, we had some pieces moving at the end, and that's one of the things that was a really high priority for us was direct care providers. This is one of the groups that kind of got left out. Was certainly something we wanted to do, and when some final adjustments were being made, that was a priority for us, Representative Liebling. That's why it's included here.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Dean, could you just tell us what was the cost on that, if you would? I don't know if that's broken out in the new spreadsheet somewhere. Maybe it is.
Yeah.
Chair Dean.
Representative Liebling, I'm looking at the spreadsheet, and it's different from my recollection, so I'm wondering if I have the right number or not.
Okay.
Representative Liebling, it's $167 and $180 for $347,000 in the biennium.
47. Okay.
And that's on line 244 of the spreadsheet of 8 of 37.
Okay. Representative Liebling?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then there is... it appears that there is quite a bit of new policy in this bill that maybe I could just ask Representative Dean whether this on line 2.5 to 1531, there's there's new language. Well, there's language. I don't know if it's really new. Maybe you could just tell me that that has to do with disability rate setting, which has been kind of a big big hot topic for a while in Health and Human Services, probably something that makes normal people go to sleep, but we hear a lot about it. And I'm just wondering, Representative Dean, if that's a bill that we heard or if it's something that's, if there's modification of that, if you could tell us what the modification is and I guess in particular whether there's any cost attached to that.
Yep.
Chair Dean.
Representative Liebling, that one is from fellow House member Peterson. Representative Nels Peterson, that is House File 1211. That's a disability waiver rate system. And the commissioner shall manage waiver allocations in such a manner as to fully use available state and federal waiver appropriations. So that's, from my understanding, within the existing appropriations. And I'm sure if I am wrong, Ms. Iverson will correct me in the next 30 seconds.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't see her jumping up, so you're probably correct on that one. And then,
it's in the out. Okay.
We just overestimated how quickly she could leap to her feet there.
Well, Representative Liebling, while you're looking for the next thing, actually, it is zero in this one and 250 in the next 2018 out biennium, 250,000.
In the next biennium, okay.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 15.32. This looks like a new DHS study, and often when we ask DHS to do new studies, they charge us for them. And so I'm just wondering whether this one, whether this one carries any cost.
Yeah. That would be the same, Representative Liebling, as zero this one, and it's also included within the 250 that we have scheduled into 2018 in the next thing.
Okay.
Representative Liebling.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then we've got the part that you mentioned, Representative Dean, 16.18 to 16.32, and this has to do with a Border City nursing facility rate increase.
Yep.
And everybody in the Health and Human Service, well, on multiple Health and Human Service committees, we heard lots of testimony about struggles that nursing facilities are having, and in fact, in this, in the large bill is contained Representative Schumacher's bill, House File 316, that does a complete revamp of the nursing home rate system. And so I was really curious to see that this was appearing here because I thought that this was a bill that was kind of belonged in the category of what I would call hedging our bets in case 316 didn't get funded. And it had to do with increasing rates of certain border communities that, because there were, I guess, across the state line, they were paying higher rates and it created a competition problem. But since 316 is in the omnibus bill, I'm wondering why this is here, and also if it carries a cost, which I'm sure it would since this is increasing rates.
Chair Dean.
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, Representative Schumacher does more to make the reimbursement system fair than any bill in the last 20 years, and I think it's really done a great thing for Minnesota nursing, skilled nursing facilities across the state of Minnesota. There are going to be some facilities that just face a weird issue that we're going to have to deal with. This may be one of them in Breckenridge, where it's literally on the border and they have a very peculiar situation. This is a Breckenridge facility, Northwest Minnesota, right on the border. There is no cost to the provisions in 16 subdivision 66 from within this. There's no cost within the this, but it does give them some additional abilities to deal with their situation. So it's not a belt. It's not a belt and suspenders provision. This is just kind of a one-off position, just for that specific area. And that's, as I said, Representative Backer, who is very on the committee and very keenly aware of the peculiar situation that's up there.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Chair Dean, I'm with you on the revamping of the rates, and I think we've had a lot of discussion about that, and I think that we have bipartisan agreement that we have a severe situation and that an overhaul is needed. But I must say I'm a little dismayed by this. Perhaps I'll have to ask some more questions offline and understand it better, but when we have, you're saying we have a one-off situation. The reason we have a kind of a crazy quilt situation right now across the state is because everybody has a one-off situation. Probably every member around this table could talk about they have particular situations in the nursing homes in their area, and part of that was created by this sort of a long history, and no matter who was in charge, people have sort of tried to do patchwork fixes over a long period of time, and this gets exceedingly complicated. But I'm just concerned that all of a sudden we show up with an exception before we even put in the new rule. And I'm just, just want you to know that that's something that's, it just kind of caught my attention that we're doing that, and I'm interested to hear that it doesn't actually cost anything new here, but I'll have to ask the Department of Human Services about that offline and try to understand that a little bit better.
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, I know that Representative Backer has spent an incredible amount of time on a few number of facilities. He's done an excellent job of informing himself of that very specific situation. And I think Representative Schumacher's bill goes further than any other, probably 95% of the way there, but we're probably always going to have to be dealing with specific situations in a non-perfect world moving forward. But I think we've gone a long distance with the bills that we have.
Representative Liebling, do you have any more questions?
Mr. Chair, if I may here. As I said, there's quite a bit in here.
Did you want us to come back to you, circle back to you, or?
Well, I think we want to get through this and probably adopt the amendment. So, and if other members have questions to the amendment, maybe, but I don't know if anybody does.
We'll wait for you.
Well, Representative, Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling serves on the committee. I don't believe any of the other members serve on the committee, and she's very well-versed in all of these provisions. And there are several provisions within this. As I said, a couple of DFL, a couple of GOP amendments. Also, I should note that the tax provisions within the bill are being removed. They're both in this bill, 1638, as well as in the tax committee. Those are going to be removed from this bill and carried in the tax committee for moving forward, so that we won't, when we address this on the floor, we won't be talking about the tax provisions within the bill. That'll be carried within the tax provisions of the tax bill and Representative Chair David's bill moving forward. So that's the other piece that you might want to that you might be looking at, Representative Liebling. But I think by bulk and by line and text and dollars, the majority of this is with the child protection.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Dean. Turning to the line 42.33, contingent rate reductions. What I understand from this section is that this is kind of a little bit of a belt and suspenders for one of your big saving pieces in the bill, in case the $150 million savings doesn't materialize from competitive bidding, that what you've got here is just telling DHS to just take it out of the rates for all individual health care providers, provider agencies, hospitals, et cetera. So I'm kind of intrigued by that. It's kind of a, I would say, take a hatchet approach, but I think that the underlying cut that you're backing up is a bit of a hatchet approach, too. Could you just tell me, is that rate cut limited to fee-for-service, or is that also in the capitated rates? Because there's no direction here that it be taken, applied to the MCOs.
Yeah. Chair Dean.
Yeah. Or maybe it is.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, that deals with two specific areas. We are looking at asking for a big stretch in terms of our cut number, and very open about that in terms of the plans. Both their administrative costs that we are asking them $100 million in terms of pulling dollars out across $4 billion in public programs that we're looking at doing. Also, $50 million that we are banking, we will be able to pull out as a result of the competition in public programs going statewide, from just the metro area to going statewide. We believe we agree with the governor that there will be cost savings with that reform that Commissioner Jessen put in place. This particular provision was put in place by then Chair Abler in 2011. That would allow the commissioner to back up projected savings with rate cuts across programs, with the exception of skilled nursing facilities, Representative Liebling. So the direct answer to your question is yes.
Representative Liebling.
So, Mr. Chair, I mean, Representative Dean, it's obviously it's your bill, but I mean, I think that people probably... even though this amendment came kind of late and people are probably getting a look at it for the first time, I think that the healthcare providers, agencies, hospitals, other residential settings, and anybody who is a healthcare provider that gets paid through the managed care and county-based purchasing plans, everybody except nursing facilities needs to be on notice that you're on the hook for helping to pay this $150 million if this bill should become law. So,
Mr. Chair, Dean, would you like to respond?
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, that would be the case if they are unsuccessful in getting those cost reductions. And we believe that they would be, and they should be able to find those costs as they have in the past. But obviously, we want to provide some backup and also some incentive to get those costs and pull them out.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then on line 44.16, I think you're just deleting language about the TANF nurse home visiting program. And I'm just wondering, I just want to confirm that just goes along with the deletion of that program that's in the spreadsheet, and that isn't anything new. It's just kind of clean up there?
Yes.
Chair Dean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, yes.
Okay, and then Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you. And then
on
line 44.18,
I'm not sure.
There is, let's see, maybe I'm giving you the wrong line. It might be 44.17, but there's a part in here that where we're removing, oh, yeah, that is 44.18, deleting the line about these funds shall be used to pay costs in Minnesota Care Program. I'm just wondering, maybe actually fiscal staff could help with this, because I think that this is removing the requirement for the $196 million on the spreadsheet, that it has to do with a shift that's on the spreadsheet that's kind of complicated, that I had difficulty understanding the first time through, and now it's being changed. So I wonder if we could get a little understanding of that, because it is $196 million that's going from one place to another and back again or something.
Mr. Chair,
Chair Dean.
Representative Liebling, I think Mr. Berg can explain the technical change from why that was inserted into the language. It just kind of addresses the provisions within the Health Care Access Fund money.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Berg. If you could just state your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, I'm Doug Berg. I'm the fiscal analyst for the Human Services Finance Committee. Representative Liebling, the line you reference makes the exact same thing we were doing before happen in a simpler fashion. And if you look on page 7 of the spreadsheet, before we were taking the 15 money and using it to essentially pay 16 costs that would have been paid by 16 money in the Healthcare Access Fund, thus creating a surplus in the Healthcare Access Fund and then spending it on general fund. This just allows it to be spent directly out on MA costs. You get the exact same effect. It just is much simpler tracking and easier for people to understand. It does the same thing.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you. Mr. Berg, I think you're assuming too much about my knowledge. So it does the same thing. Could you just walk through again what the same thing is?
All right.
Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, on page 7 of the spreadsheet you should have, line 211 and down, or actually I'll start at the bottom on line 216. There's a provision at the end of the appropriation section that amendment you were looking at refers to that appropriates $196 million of fiscal 15 money to the Commissioner of Human Services for transfer into the Health Care Access Fund. And you see on line 216 a carry forward from 15 in the Health Care Access Fund, a negative number showing that there's more revenue into the fund. And then on the next line up from that, on 215, you have an appropriation of $196 million for medical assistance costs in fiscal 16. And that then creates on line 214 a savings of $196 million in the general fund against the medical assistance program.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the bottom line of that is, again, that we're taking Health Care Access Fund money and just spending it in the general fund, correct?
Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, this bill does do that, but this provision, I would say, actually is taking general fund money, and then it is increasing the Health Care Access Fund balance with general fund money, and then spending it to, say, have a general fund savings. It's just a question of what year it happens in.
Okay.
Representative Liebling.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And sometimes I wonder, am I the only person who doesn't still totally get that? But it's clearer, put it that way. So, okay. All right, Mr. Chair, I think those are my questions about the amendment, this short little amendment that came in kind of late. Sorry to spend the committee's time, but as you can tell, there's quite a bit going on here.
All right. Any other discussion to the amendment? Any further discussion? Chair Dean, any final comments?
Nope.
All right. All those in favor of adopting the H1638A42-2 amendment as amended, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Chair Dean, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and with that, we have got numerous provisions within this legislation, obviously both from the Departments of Health and the Departments of Human Services, with member provisions from both the DFL side as well as the GOP side. The biggest reforms that I would direct members to would be the ones that we just discussed with child protection as a new initiative as a result of the recommendations that was brought forward by the task force and within public programs. Minnesota is one state that has two ways of helping low-income people purchase health care insurance through the exchange, as every other state does, as well as what is called a basic health plan. Minnesota is the only state in the country with one. We are proposing merging those two programs into one program and one that is sustainable and paid for and that low and middle income Minnesotans can depend on for years to come and to provide more choices for those people. That is one of the major pieces of this that is obviously very different from the governor's provisions as well as the Senate provisions. We understand that. We're also asking a lot from the plans in terms of really pulling down some costs as a result of competitive bidding, and as well as provisions from Representative Drazkowski and Representative Pearson to really look at very, very large numbers that we would like to save that Minnesotans are currently spending on ineligible enrollees, as well as wasted money that goes to procedures and stuff that we shouldn't be paying for. So we are looking at pulling down some large savings from that $300 million, as a matter of fact, from the provisions of those two authors, as well as the reforms that we talked about earlier with the administrative costs as well as competitive bidding. That's where the bulk of those differences are, where the bulk of the savings come from. We did adjust our target up twice, once today and once previous, to really address the fact that we did have an aggressive target within this area, and also to pay for some of the really important things, two of which are the 5% campaign that was brought forward by Representative Hamilton for direct care workers in the second year of the biennium. And I think that's a very important provision that Representative Hamilton brought forward. Also, Representative Schumacher's nursing home reforms that we are paying for and bringing forward. The MnSure program has been one that has been very controversial that we will be talking about, I'm sure, on the floor. Moving ahead, Representative Mack's House File 5 is contained in this bill, which looks at ways to reform that. As well as a sunset of the MnSure plan in 2017. So I'm sure we'll have lots of debate about that as well on the floor. That's been in the news and on the floor. We're very familiar with that debate. So those are some of the highlight points of the bill and some of the differences between the bill that we have before us and the bill that the governor proposed and the one that's currently in the Senate and, from what I understand, will be voted on tomorrow. So with that, members, Mr. Chair and members, I would appreciate your support and also be happy to answer any questions. We have staff here as well, folks from the department, if there's particular questions about provisions within the overall 350-page bill that you have before you. And also we'll be available between now and the time that we go on the floor, whenever that will be scheduled, which I don't know when that will be, Mr. Chair.
Okay, members, I have one person, Mr. Gehrman, that wanted to testify, and I also had Representative Carlson on the list. Representative Carlson, would you like to ask your question now, or would you like to wait for the testimony?
I can wait.
Okay. All right. Is Mr. Gehrman here? Well, actually, now would be a good time for you to testify, if you're willing to testify. He doesn't want to testify. Okay. All right. Thank you, sir. All right. Okay, I guess we don't have anyone else that I'm aware of that had contacted us in advance for testimony. I know there was lots of testimony in the Health and Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. So, Representative Carlson.
Yeah, first of all, my question, and maybe Mr. Marks or Mr. Bird can help with this, but I just want to verify, compared to the February forecast going in, my numbers had it at a reduction of $978,832,000. And what is the number compared to the federal or February forecast that I should have in there,
Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair, as Representative Dean has stated earlier, it's a negative now. It's a negative $956,652,000.
I meant negative, didn't I say it? 956.
652.
652.
The number is at the top of the spreadsheet that Mr. Berg prepared. If you look at that little calculation at the top of the spreadsheet, it's showing the original target change, the April 20th target, which was negative 1008832, and then. The next calculation in there, the 1152 plus 196 is the spending in fiscal 15 in here. That gets to the 956,652.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I hadn't noticed that in the upper right-hand corner, so that was helpful. My other question, Representative Dean, you commented that in a variety of ways you were coming up with about $300 million in savings and or potential savings. Has that been verified by the department, or just what's behind that? Because it appears to me an awful lot is riding on this bill in terms of what you yourself described as potential savings. So
Chair Dean,
could maybe get into that in a little bit more detail, Mr. Chairman. I'd appreciate it, Representative Dean.
Chair Dean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, Representative Drazkowski's bill and Representative Pearson's bill goes after eligibility issues first and foremost, and then waste and abuse issues. So that's people who are on programs that don't belong there, number one. And the legislative auditor's report came out with a big backlog of folks who we have not checked sometimes for over a year in terms of their eligibility status. And the auditor looked at a very narrow band within that and found a 17% error rate within that. Now, that doesn't mean that there's 17% of the people who are on programs that shouldn't be on programs, but there's a fairly healthy percentage of folks who actually are and that we are currently unaware of. We looked at other states, Illinois and Pennsylvania in particular, who have looked at eligibility requirements. Also, we asked for a fiscal note on that, and the fiscal note within a very narrow category, not across all programs, showed a modest savings in the first biennium, but then in the second biennium, in fact, showed $145 million in savings in the second biennium, and one fiscal note, and then also another modest fiscal note on the waste side for example, billing Medicare and Medicaid for the same thing, billing for hospice services after death, delivering one drug, billing for a frontline drug, and or delivering a generic and billing for a frontline drug. Those certain things that other states are looking at and collecting with vendor contracts in a gain-sharing agreement, which would not cost the state money. So as we took the fiscal notes as one piece of evidence and expanded that across programs as one piece, a second piece was the legislative auditor's data, and the third piece was the other states that Representative Drazkowski and Representative Pearson looked at. That's where we got that the $300 million piece from that, and certainly that's an aggressive goal, but across $4 billion worth of public programs, we certainly believe that that is an attainable one that we not only should be looking, trying to look at, but also collecting.
And Representative Carlson, if I could add on to that, I think for all members, you'll recall one of the very first committee hearings we had here was on the large projected increase in medical assistance, and we had the legislative auditor in, and I know I've looked through the report that he issued very carefully, and the 17% number has been referenced, but if you look at the sampling he did in medical assistance itself, about 9% of the people he sampled in medical assistance were not eligible for the medical assistance program. And so if you consider that we're spending between $4 and $5 billion a year of general fund money on medical assistance, you know, surely we're not going to claim that we can get 9% of all of that. But what's being proposed in the bill is only a fairly small fraction of what might be there, at least based on the sampling numbers that the legislative auditor did. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm familiar with the legislative auditor's report. That's quite frankly why I brought up the question. It sounds to me, and I, like I said, a lot is riding on the bill on the accuracy of that $300 million. And what we generally rely on are the fiscal notes. And we have two fiscal notes, as was mentioned.
the rest of it appears somewhat speculative from the standpoint of looking at other states not really having at least a formal fiscal note on some of that that we would normally rely on. My recollection on the 17%, I think Representative Dean touched on that, was that was an error rate, and there were a number of errors that didn't necessarily mean fraud, you know, paper type errors for whatever reason, and that the number that you described that you were after would probably be somewhat, maybe even significantly below the 17% from what I understood when the report was made. So there's one question would be fraud or people being incorrectly perhaps placed on the program. But another would be if there were just simply technical errors. And I also understand that some of those errors might have been of people that would have maybe run the wrong program but would have qualified somewhere else. So when we talk about overall savings, that's why I was trying to see what we could find out about just how accurate that $300 million is, because a lot is riding on this bill and how accurate that that number is. At any rate, I sometimes have my questions about fiscal notes myself, but they're the ones that we rely on, and that's, in my view, something that we generally have pretty solid footing on. The rest of it, I'm just not sure of, quite frankly, Representative Dean. The other point I wanted to make, I do have concerns. That's why I wanted to verify where we were finally with that that number after the amendments today, that $956 million. This is the hardest hit area in the entire state budget, I think, probably both numerically and probably also when I look at the various negative numbers here as a percentage of the budget as well. And I just have, and we've had from the get-go here with amendments that we proposed when the budget resolution was adopted, a lot of concern about going too deep here, far too deep in my view. And when you look at where the governor was with a positive number, and we have this large negative number, even though it has been corrected to some degree in the last couple of days, it's a huge swing, and I think inherent with some risk factors. I was glad you did something, because we had heard early on that there wasn't anything initially in child protection, and you did correct that here today with the $52 million. So I guess that would be a positive thing relative to the bill. Assuming that that was what was needed there. But I think I've said enough today, and if you take that in the context of what we've said earlier, and there are other parts of the budget overall that I continue to have a lot of concern about. We still have on the bottom line then, what did we say earlier is the bottom line now?
I think it's budget, 96 or 97 million.
96 million. And we don't have much left out there in terms of bills coming through. There'd be a capital investment bill, potentially. I happen to be one that think you'll have one in the end.
We don't think there's going to be one of those, but anyway.
Well, I think in the end there will be.
Mm-hmm.
That may be a disagreement, Mr. Chairman, but minimally there's a few leaky roofs out there that I think we're going to want to invest in repairing, if nothing else, because they get more expensive later. I don't know how big the bill will be, but I think we'll have one. But my point is, here we're looking at this huge cut, and there's still $96 million on the bottom line. Even if you put in a large capital investment bill, I think we're talking somewhere around $55, $56 million. So that still leaves some rather significant numbers on the bottom line, even if you did have a capital investment bill. That probably roughly cut it in half at an $850 million bill. And I'm not predicting what the size of the bill will be, just that there will be one. But there are some things I think we could have done a little differently.
Chair.
Okay. And let's see, I've got a couple different people that want to say something here. But just really quickly, Representative Carlson, just a few points. First, I guess we look at the total number of spending a little bit differently, at least I do. I mean, I guess as I add up the money that we've added back to that, look at the projected spending that is being projected for the 14-15 biennium versus what we're proposing in 16-17. With this new money, there will be a $635 million increase in spending from the former biennium to the biennium that we're budgeting for. Secondly, I would say in regard to the legislative auditor, as I mentioned, if you look at the report and really drill down into people who are just ineligible as have been sampled for medical assistance, it comes out to be about 9%. Now, I do want to say, and now the other 17%, as you mentioned, in some cases it's people who are on the wrong program. In some cases they may be eligible for a better program. But if you simply look at the people who are ineligible for medical assistance, it's about 9%. And there's probably some fraud there, but I guess I don't want to be accusing people of fraud so much as it's just the case that I think that there are a lot of people on these programs that for whatever reason we haven't checked up on their eligibility. Maybe they were eligible when they first got on the program, but they're not anymore. And so I don't think to the extent there's fraud, I don't know that there's that much fraud here as opposed to just an example of people who are ineligible that aren't eligible now, and thus we shouldn't be spending taxpayers' money on them because they're not eligible. But I guess to that point, Representative Carlson, and then I'll go to Representative Driscoll.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, in fact, I can probably guess what he's going to say because he's said it before, kind of like what I've said before. But, you have to look at what the cost drivers are when you're comparing one biennium to the next. And I was only bringing up the 17% because it appears to me to be soft. And I think this discussion shows that it probably is a soft number. And it's not verified in the same way we usually verify most of our expenditures, and that's with a fiscal note. It's partially verified with two fiscal notes, but not totally. So I think there's a risk factor was the point that I was trying to make in terms of that. When you bring up that question, I suspect I could have for today requested of the department or others what some of those cost drivers were, one biennium over another. But if you'll recall yesterday when we were dealing with the education bill, I had virtually every dollar outlined in terms of what that $1 billion increase was for education. One of the large ones was when you cared, in that case, if you remember, $450 million or whatever that $1 billion was the fact that kindergarten now goes on the line, full all-day kindergarten, both years of the biennium and not just one. 17,000 students, $252 million, I think, in enrollment increases. Now, I don't want to go back to K-12 and have redo that discussion in total, but I think the same questions could be raised here when we talk about comparing one biennium over another, and that is, what were the cost drivers? And perhaps somebody can provide some of us with that information from the department before the bill is up on the House floor, if that's going to be part of the debate. And it sounds like it very well could be, because I view it relative to the February forecast negatively, and you view it positively, and I think only one of us can be right.
I think they may be both right, Representative.
Well, I suppose it could happen. Yeah. Thank you.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, Representative Carlson, I think you're right. We don't know exactly how much this is going to save. And I've read the auditor's report, too. As a matter of fact, I think it was his third or fourth type of report in this area over a decade of inquiries to our agency that was supposed to be conducting eligibility according to both state and federal law, and turns out hadn't been. And I actually had a chance to talk to the auditor afterwards, and it sounded like, at least in terms of income verification, there was virtually nothing going on through MNsure. Not that they weren't checking the databases that were available to check the enrollment rolls against the Department of Revenue information, etc. So I think as you look at what has happened in Illinois, you know, I'm trying to remember they are projecting somewhere around a $200 or $300 million in savings, and that's at about 3.5% or so, if I remember correctly. They've got about twice the population we do, but you know, I think there's definitely a lot of opportunity to bring some accountability and bring some savings there. You know, in Illinois, and it's not just about fraud; it's also about waste. In Illinois, they found 8,000 dead people that were signed up for their programs, and so this is an activity that's very important that we go through and do this. I also find it, I don't know if you'd call it encouraging, but at least encouraging that we're on the right track here. If our own department, who is accountable to be doing this, says that there's at least $150 million of savings, I would expect their number to be, that they would project in that fiscal note, to be as conservative as they could probably put forward. So I was actually surprised they put a number that big forward. But I think we're on the right track. We don't know for sure what the savings will be, but I think Representative Dean had a good approach in the bill.
Hey, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Dean. I really want to talk about this amount of savings and where you think you're going to get the money from. So do you anticipate the savings coming from not sending out benefits to people who are not eligible, or do you think you're going to be recovering money from people who already got benefits that weren't eligible?
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hillstrom, typically, what they will do is they will find people who are ineligible. The outside vendor will have software that will go over the top of the department software in terms of billing and find errors and look at both recovery and prevention. So there's two pieces to that. One side is recovery and one side is prevention, so that is both. Realizing that you can't, that there's not going to be 100% recovery from people who, you know, just don't have resources, quite frankly. But it's both prospective and retrospective collection.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so do you fund the project to actually find this fraud or people who are ineligible? And how much money do you allocate? And how much money do you anticipate in a ratio based on how much money you allocate versus how much money you're going to recover?
Chair Dean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, the other states that have successfully implemented this have entered into a gain-sharing agreement in which the vendor takes a percentage of the collection or the amount saved and gives the rest of the money to the state, so it doesn't cost us anything up front. The fees are paid by the successful collection from the vendors. That is administered through the department and the commissioner through that contract.
Mr. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if you're actually going to send a case for prosecution for welfare fraud, I've actually prosecuted a couple of welfare fraud cases. In many instances, there's both state money and federal money. Doesn't the federal government come in and take back their share of the money that you're supposed to recover as a state? And do you account for that immediate loss of money in these cases as they go forward for prosecution in your recovery, because welfare fraud case might take more than a year, of course, or more to prosecute successfully, and even longer to recover the money.
Chair Dean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, again, I think that when you're looking at the reality of this, much of those dollars are probably going to be impossible or hard to get, and how the allocation of that would work with state and federal money, you're correct. It's a mixture of both in our state programs. How that would work and how that money would flow back to the federal government, I don't know at this point. But the collections in other states have worked in that way. And as far as the criminal prosecution, that is not my area. You would be able to tell me a lot about that.
Mr.
Chair. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Dean. So what I'm trying to get at, though, is the money that you're booking. Because ultimately, if you say you're going to have vendors go out and collect the money, and then they're going to take a portion of it and give you back a portion of it, and then you're going to count on recovering some of it, I'm trying to figure out what methodology you use to decide how much you were going to recover and how much you were actually going to save. Did you take a percentage of some other state? Did you guess? How did you come up with the money you think you're going to save?
Chair Dean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, our spreadsheets contain only state dollars, and that's all we're looking at in terms of percentage of recovery, and our fiscal notes reflect that as well.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But doesn't the federal government come in and take their chair off the top, so you actually have to pay them back even before you get any money, so you might actually end up spending more state dollars at first? Maybe recover them later, but you might actually lose money and not gain back as much savings as you think?
You know, Representative Hillstrom, if I could, I think, you know, as Chair Dean has kind of hinted, you know, most of the money is probably in the sense of money that is not paid out in future benefits. So just as the federal government would be paying out benefits, we wouldn't be paying out benefits. But Chair Dean.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hillstrom, you know, how this... any collected funds, that would be the federal, how that federal portion works. I would have to work with the department to see what we currently do. But again, we're just looking at the state portion of our dollars and making our adjustments and our goals based on the state share, not on our combined share. And the budget that we have before us is state-only dollars that we're looking at. But that's clearly a mechanism that we'd have to look at and work out.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Dean, then just based on the state dollars, what formula did you use or how did you come to the number of savings that you have? Because, again, we've heard a lot of testimony or discussion that maybe your numbers are a little mushy.
Chair Dean.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hillstrom, again, we set out a number, a goal that we're looking at that we think is reasonable based on three things: the auditor's report, the fiscal notes, and the experience in other states of state-only gains. We're going to dispute that probably. We're going to, you know, I think that because that is a number that we have to look, go out and find. Over Easter break, I read a book called Reagan in His Own Hand, which is about him getting ready to run for the 1980 presidential nomination. And he was talking about welfare fraud. And he said welfare fraud and health care fraud and abuse is really hard to detect. He says, you know why? Because you got to put your hat and coat on and go out and find it. And I think that there's some of that here, too. Unless we go out and find it and we look at it, when we go out to find it and collect it, we're not going to get it. But I think that this is something that's very important. And as I, you know, Chair Nornes understands the dealing with a target, a hard target in higher ed, you know, we look back to 2011 with a $5 billion deficit and a huge projected growth in HHS. We were way off on the HHS projections with respect to Medicaid growth. That is money that could have gone to higher ed that year if our numbers were right. When we just book inflation and we just accept it as fact, that we pay for that, not just in state and federal dollars that go out, but Representative Loon pays for that, Representative Nornes pays for that, and all the chairs around the table pay for that in dollars and resources that could go to other priorities that can't because they're booked in automatic cost plus inflation plus status quo that I think we need to rethink.
Mr. Chair, last question.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Dean, so your department is going to end up with this number locked in. You're going to be stuck with it, whatever you put in the fiscal note. So what happens to your programs and what happens to the department if you don't hit that number? What do you do? What programs are cut? What's eliminated? What happens if you don't hit the mushy number that you're putting in this bill?
Chair Dean.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Hillstrom, as we've said before, the part of the portion of this bill is a rate cut that is dependent that if we miss projected numbers that $150 million is put on the table in potential rate cuts as an incentive to go out and find those dollars. But we really believe that unless we budget, book, and move forward on these things, we're just never going to experience any savings. So we think it's a prudent step, and it's one that certainly is prospective, so it's going to attract folks who say that that's too high. Some people say it's too low. I was certainly pushed to make that number higher, and I think it's a reasonable number, and it's a number that we should book.
Mr. Chair, just a clarification. Sorry.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So when you say a rate cut to who? I'm sorry, I don't serve on Health and Human Services, and I want to understand whose money is rates going to be cut.
Chairman Dean.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hillstrom, that was the rate cuts as the departments to all providers within all our public programs absent the nursing homes.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I feel like I need to get into this discussion, too, because a few things need to be added to it, and that is, first of all, the Department of Human Services has been very clear that they don't know where this $300 million comes from. And the commissioner said in our committee that she was very concerned about using that figure. Because even though she's not adverse to hiring an outside auditor, and I think actually the whole committee is in support of using an outside auditor to try to, or verification system, none of us are against that. However, the fiscal estimate here that's in the bill is absolutely fiction, total fiction. And I have in my hands the two fiscal notes from the two bills, one from Representative Pearson, one from Representative Drazkowski. The number that is the savings that were estimated in this bill, each of these bills is under $18 million for the biennium in each of them. And I think there's some overlap between the two. They're not doing two separate things. But even if they were cumulative, you're only looking there at, $36 million, not $300 million. The basis of putting in your fiscal note that you're going to get a $300 million savings from this verification, you know, Representative Dean, even if you're a starving man and you go out in the park with a really good metal detector and you put on your coat and your hat and you look and you look and you look, you're probably only going to find a little spare change out there. You're probably not going to find gold bullion because it isn't there. And that's the problem with this, members. You are building a budget on savings that will not materialize. And, you know, you haven't heard from Representative Dean, even though he's been asked and asked, to kind of give you more meat about where this money's going to come from. The answer is that it isn't there. Minnesota is very different from Illinois, and while nobody doubts that there can be some savings, as the Department of Human Services has said, there probably are things missed. A lot of the errors that were identified in that report that we're all referring to the auditor's report that said that there was this 17% and so on, a lot of those issues were issues that had to do with the implementation of MNsure and kind of getting things up and running. And everything's not perfect still. We all know that. But a lot of those systems have now been corrected. So that's 17%. I'm sure if the auditor was to do that report again right now, it probably wouldn't be zero, but it would be a much lower number already. Just turning to the issue about finding dead people, which is, you know, the great joke about Illinois is that dead people vote there. I suppose they get welfare benefits there. They do all kinds of things. Great place to move to, I guess, because if you want to continue long after you die, I guess you could go to Illinois. But in Minnesota, DHS does have a system of checking against death certificates. And they do that in a very regular way, as I understand. So to say that Minnesota is going to find a bunch of people who are dead, who are on our rolls that we're paying money for, it's just not realistic. So, members, we all want to save money. None of us want our money to be wasted. And we all know we have scarce resources. But you can't put together a bill that is made up of completely made-up numbers. You just can't do it. And unfortunately, that is not the only made-up savings in this bill. There are other things here as well. We already talked with the author's amendment about the contingent rate cuts that Representative Dean put in case he doesn't hit the, I think it was the $150 million that was supposed to come out of the, I can't recall if it was the maybe $50 million that was supposed to come out of the statewide bidding. There was supposed to be some savings there. And we're already putting belt and suspenders on that, which I guess is better because for sure we don't want to just have a hole. But people need to understand what's going on here. I think this entire bill is really a lot like setting up a checking account and depositing a bunch of checks that are probably bad checks, or at least you have no reason to think they're good checks, and then you write a bunch of checks to people off of that account without knowing if that stuff ever clears, and half of it isn't going to. This is a checkbook. This is a checking account in this bill where we have pretty good reason to believe that a lot of these checks that are the savings are not going to clear. And that's the kind of budget that's being built here. But more important than that, members, perhaps more important, when these checks fail to clear, a lot of people who've received our checks are going to be sorely disappointed. That's the problem with that. But perhaps more importantly, this bill relies on eliminating our Minnesota Care program. And the fiscal estimates that underlie that are also extremely shaky. And what's happening there, and Representative Dean mentioned it kind of just in passing at the beginning of his presentation, is that the Minnesota Care program right now is largely funded out of our Healthcare Access Fund. And so what he's doing in the bill is getting rid of the Minnesota Care program, taking that money, dumping it in the general fund, that's another big chunk of savings, and then replacing Minnesota Care with a program that's pretty ill-defined. When you look at the fiscal note on that Minnesota Care program, you see that the Department of Human Services is saying, first of all, there are so many problems with doing it, so many reasons that it won't hold up in time to give these savings in this fiscal note. And one of the problems is they say it simply cannot be done by January 1st of 2016. And it says that right in the fiscal note. So there are just so many problems underlying this. One of them is that the new program, the Minnesota Care Replacement Program, relies on a great deal of reprogramming of MNsure's systems. Now, I'm sure everybody here remembers when we started MNsure and we did it on a really quick timeline and we tried to do these huge technology build that just wasn't ready for rollout. And what Representative Dean's bill is requiring is to do that same kind of thing for this new program that he's putting together on extremely short notice. So, you know, I'm not going to go into great detail here. I wish you would all take the fiscal note and read it because it's got a lot of narrative in it, and it's extremely interesting because it clearly says that this is simply not going to work. So it says, ending the Minnesota Care Program, and this is just one example, ending the Minnesota Care Program would require significant work within eligibility and information technology systems. And the full impact of these changes on IT systems would not be known until the legislation is passed and the business requirements are determined. So this is basically asking to go back to MNsure, which we all know is extremely, is getting better, but still isn't perfect, has a lot of reworking that has to be done in the technology, and that people are still working very hard to get all this right, and dumps this huge new population in there with what amounts to a new program with all kinds of parameters that are not determined. So just to be clear, this is a bill that points in all kinds of different directions. It's a bill that doesn't know which way it's going. It's got different policy issues that are really in conflict with each other. It relies on savings that are pretty much made up out of whole cloth. And this is a bill, remember, that your constituents are relying on our programs. Minnesota Care is mainly a program. Many of the people who rely on Minnesota Care are in the rural districts. That's where the higher percentage of Minnesota Care enrollees are. And what this bill does is dump that program very quickly and rely on a bunch of what I would call magical thinking that there's going to be a replacement program up and running in time to pick them up. And that program, even if magic happened and that program could be put in place, that program is substantially worse for your constituents than the one that you would be getting rid of. So, Mr. Chair, obviously there isn't really a question in that. We're going to have a lot more debate on the floor, I'm sure, but I would just recommend to members that you not vote for this bill. Because I could write a bill really easily that could save zillions of dollars. If I wrote a bill that just eliminated the whole Department of Human Services, it would save a great deal of money. You know? But that can't happen. We can't move our state forward. We can't serve our constituents by doing that. This bill just makes up the numbers. It says, cut the Department of Human Services 15%. It doesn't say what's going to be cut. It doesn't tell them what they're not going to do. It just says cut. It does the same thing to the Department of Health. It just says cut the Department of Health 15%. That's where the savings come from. And sure, there's some wonderful new spending in the bill. I calculated quickly over $300 million of new spending in this bill. And that new spending, those promises to people, are depending on these fanciful cuts that aren't going to work. And I think that's pretty unfair to give people that kind of false hope. So, members, I think this bill should go back to the drawing board. It should use real numbers. It should be honest. And do something so that you're not making false promises to Minnesotans, so that you're not hurting vulnerable Minnesotans. People's very lives and health depend on this bill. So I highly recommend that members vote no.
Representative Cornish.
Actually, Representative Liebling, I think you're wrong. I'll give you a couple of stories. First of all, I think the collections will be there. To give you an idea, I was contacted by a fraud investigator from a county, and we had two fraud investigators come up. This was years ago up in the second floor at that time, I think, and they sat down, and they astounded us by how much fraud was out there. But you know what they did? They asked us not to divulge their names or tell us which county they were from, because they thought that their county would get harassed by people that thought they were too hard-hearted and were going after the underprivileged. So we couldn't even use their names, but we used their figures. And they said between the illegal aliens in our country and the cheaters that do cheat, there was an astounding amount of collections to be made. And also, we aren't groundbreaking here. I think both parties, I'd have to check, but both parties have, when you figured out your budgets, and Representative Carlson, you probably can confirm this, we've figured an income into the budget or a savings by going after tax compliance, tax cheaters, and compliance. We figure that into our budget as money's coming in. And in one instance, we figured it, and the money came in over the expectations. So I think there's a good chance that the money will come in over expectations. We've done this before. And I really think there's a chance. And the reason I think sometimes we don't go after fraud more than we do is because people think we're mean, hard-hearted, we're being hard on the underprivileged and the low-income people, and it's not a popular thing to do. But the DHS, I got one full-time investigator, Jerry something now, and he seems to be pretty good at his job and thinks that there's a lot to do out there. So I think it's a good bill, and I'm looking forward to voting for it. Thank you.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd just like to respond to that briefly. And Representative Cornish, nobody believes that every single person on the program is legitimate. None of us believe that. There's always going to be fraud in there, and we all want to root it out. So and that's why we all support, actually, getting an outside vendor. The Department of Human Services does not oppose doing that. The problem is how much you're expecting to get. There are a couple fiscal notes here, and even if you add them together, you get about $36 million in savings. This bill books $300 million. And actually, Representative Hillstrom was absolutely right. Since half of it goes back to the federal government, that probably means that you've got to find $600,000 in savings before you can get the $600 million in savings before you can book the $300 million that's in this bill. I mean, I'd like to get asked, if the chair would indulge me, I mean, this is a pretty darn important question. I'd like to ask Mr. Berg to come up if he can and tell us if he's aware of how this number was arrived at, because this is a cornerstone of this bill.
While Mr. Berg's coming up, let me just...
Representative Liebling, I think I could...
Go ahead. Go ahead, Chair Dean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, we've gone through several times where that number came from, so Mr. Berg isn't going to be able to provide you any new information on that. I would remind you that they are state-only dollars that we are looking at, and we look at our all-of-funds budget. It's going to be much larger than that. I'd also remind you, Representative Liebling, if you look at the second portion of that Drazkowski fiscal note, it in fact does come up with $145 million, and that's because they delay the implementation. We're looking at a quicker implementation, and we're going across all public programs. That's where that comes from. Representative Liebling, I know you're not going to agree with it, we're just going to have to agree to disagree on that portion of the fiscal note moving forward, and I think you probably won't agree on the floor either, but I don't think that we're probably going to be plowing any new ground.
Representative Liebling, let me just, in terms of where numbers come from, I guess let me, give you one sense. I talked to you about, if you drill down to the legislative auditor's report, 9% of the people that he sampled were not eligible for medical assistance. We are projected to spend in the February forecast $5 billion of state money in each of the next 2 years. So a very simple calculation of 5 plus 5, $10 billion times 9% would be $900 million. Now, obviously, Chair Dean isn't claiming anything close to that, and that doesn't include other programs, Minnesota Care, MinSure, other programs. That's just the medical assistance program. And you were here, I believe, Representative Liebling, when we had the legislative auditor in here. Frankly, he, to me, seemed pretty perturbed over the fact that he's been bringing this to the attention of the state for years. And I would also mention that, you said that while the department had corrected a lot of the things, he's had another report that has since come out, since the report that he gave us in November, where he identified additional problems and additional potential savings. And so, this has been an ongoing problem for many years, Representative Liebling. It has. And there's a lot of money here. There's a lot of other states that have gotten a lot of money doing this. And, personally, I would tell you that I think there's probably more money than the money that Chair Dean is booking. But, if you look at what I thought was a very excellent hearing we had here when the legislative auditor came forward, there is certainly lots of potential for funds here. And if you simply do the math, you can come up with you know, way more than $300 million. But Representative Liebling.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that it's true. We're going to have to agree to disagree on some parts of this, but I do think that when you put numbers like this into a fiscal note, that you at least owe to the public to explain in detail where you got that number. And I still haven't heard in detail where that number came from. There ought to be some, you know, when agencies give us a fiscal note, they give us a great deal of detail so that we can drill down into what assumptions they made, where each of the figures came from, and then we can question them. What I've heard from Representative Dean so far, and even from you, Mr. Chair, is very sweeping generalization about where this might come from. And I just feel that that is insufficient in order to make promises to people about their health care. And that is what we are doing here. And so I guess I would ask then, you know, we would all be delighted if we could get that much money out of our programs in fraud. Because, again, we all agree on that. There is no question. The question, though, is how much really is there and how much can you book? And I repeat, if we're getting state savings of $300 million, that means we're getting all funds savings of $600 million or thereabouts. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're a small state. We are not Illinois, and I think our systems work a lot better in general than Illinois', I would venture to say. And even in Illinois, I have in front of me a report from their Department of Human Services, and they talk about the fact that a lot of the people that they found committing, you know, that they dumped off their programs where they got this big savings, were actually people who just didn't respond to the letter that they sent out, and that those people came back and re-enrolled. So the assumption, we need to understand what assumptions are baked into this so that we can see if those assumptions are at all realistic. And we don't have that here. So, you know, if you want to have a bill that just makes up numbers, make them up. But that's what it is, Mr. Chair. It's really, you know, it might be an educated guess, but it's still just a guess.
Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought about 2 months ago we were lectured at great length by former Speaker Thiessen on how dare we question the numbers on our fiscal notes and revenue notes. These are professionals. They're highly accurate. They're well-trained. And so I'm kind of perplexed as to why we're spending time questioning our professionals' advice. Those are the numbers we have to work with. Those are the numbers we use. And I remember on the House floor, I think you, Mr. Chairman, were chastised by the former speaker on how dare you question a revenue note or a fiscal note. So I think we need to get back to the numbers and vote on this fine bill.
Well, seeing no further discussion, I think we'll be having plenty of debate on this in the future. Chair Dean renews his motion that House File 1638, as amended, be referred to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. House File 1638, as amended, is referred to the General Register. Okay, members, tomorrow we will be taking up the tax bill, potentially the agriculture bill. I'm not sure about the agriculture bill. Members, as a lot of people know, we've been dealing with the avian flu issue. I know that I had stepped out earlier to talk to Chair Hamilton further about that. He's having more conversations with the Department of Agriculture this afternoon, and I guess we're hopeful of getting some more numbers from them, so we may have that bill on the calendar tomorrow, too. I just have to get updated from him. If not, I would anticipate we'd do it very early next week, and I think we're going to be looking at 1 o'clock tomorrow for the time that we'll come in, but stay tuned.
They should remain in their seats until we're done here.
Yeah, folks, if you can, give us a little bit of quiet here, and we're just about done. So the plan tomorrow is the tax bill, definitely, perhaps the agriculture bill, subject to the information that Chair Hamilton can get from the department. Tentative starting time at 1 o'clock. Any questions? Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, earlier I indicated that we were getting near the end, at least with the omnibus bills, and you answered two of the three questions that I had relative to that with tax and ag when you were going to post them but or take them up. But there is one bill that's been in committee almost from the very beginning. And have you made any decisions about when we're going to take up the LCCMR bill, being now that we took up the legacy bill here today? That one's been in committee since sometime in January, if I recall.
Representative Carlson, I'm expecting we probably do that next week, subject to having the time for it. I know I've got a bill, the contract ratification bill, that's been here for quite a while too, that I want to take up so that we can get it passed. And so I, you know, once we get the omnibus bills done here, I would guess we'll be taking those bills up in the near future.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. With that, members, if there are no other questions, we are adjourned.